Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. Brian Gadawa joins us. We'll be talking about the 75th Annual Academy Awards. There was some question as to whether or not this gala presentation would actually make it to television. The decision was made last week. Yes, in spite of all that's going on in the world, they will. Well, they won't. They walked the red carpet. But they didn't do it with Joan Rivers badgering them. And I still saw some pictures, some fashion plate pictures. They put Joan Rivers, I think, in a restaurant across the street from the Kodak Theater so that she couldn't bother people. The atmosphere was more subdued. I noticed an awful lot of black. An awful lot of black dresses, black tuxedos. That's fine and good. The big question was who's going to win, but probably the bigger question, and we'll deal with it in the course of this hour, a little later, with Brian Gadawa, is what would the winners say, if anything, about what's going on in the world today? One of them, actually a few of them, but one of them actually came out and said something, Michael Moore. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But we'll talk about who won the Oscars, get the basic list out with Brian Gadawa, get his reaction to it during this last hour of Issues Etc. Today we are coming to you live this Monday. It's the 24th of March. And we're talking about the Academy Awards. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Brian Gadawa is a screenwriter in Southern California. He's the screenwriter of the new movie, To End All Wars. He's author of the book, Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. We'll give a couple copies of his books away to the best callers during this hour. Those phone numbers again, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Brian, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be here, Todd. Thanks.
Brian, you have said before, and I've gone back to the tape to check the wording, but I can't for the life of me remember exactly how you put it, that film today has kind of taken the place of the high cultural arts in a lot of ways. You've made that case. I think you've made it compellingly.
Yeah, definitely.
Others would say that when it comes to American film, and especially the Oscars, this is just Hollywood doting on itself. Are the Oscars in any sense important? If so, why?
That's a good question. And to be honest with you, the whole Oscars situation for me has always and still continues to be so politically motivated. And I don't mean politics as in the war and stuff. I mean, it's, you know, who wins and whatever. There's a lot of politics involved, a lot of money, and a lot of studio pressures, and plus the fashion plate that it is, and also the self-importance that these people attach to themselves. It sort of turns my stomach, and sometimes the only reason why I'm watching it is because I'm in the industry and I have to, you know. But you know, there's a sense in which I do think movies are important. They do influence the world. They really do. But taking it from the mouths of these people last night, they seem to think that they're the ones that change the world for the better, and they're the voice of freedom and the voice of goodness in the world. And while I think there's great potential for movies to do that, and that there are some movies that do that, by and large, they're the ones who are, you know, in many ways infecting bad morals into people and destroying the culture in many ways. And so there's a tender balance there in my mind between, yeah, I agree, there's great potential for the movies, and therefore great potential in awarding people doing these things. Unfortunately, I think there needs to be a few more movies that do applaud, you know, better values and better worldviews than there are, before we can start seeing it in such a positive light as those people themselves do in the industry.
We're going to go down the list here of best actor, best actress, supporting actor, actress, and best movie, and all those kind of things. We'll start with best movie. But first, I really have to ask you that, you know, as a screenwriter, can you watch the Oscars and see the best screenwriter, screenplay, go up there onto that giant stage in the Kodak Theater without yourself just thinking, someday it will be me?
Oh, I don't know.
No, none of that with you, Brian?
I do. The kind of movies I want to write do tend to be more important movies and movies that would be more likely to be maybe nominated for awards. For instance, you know, I'm not necessarily as interested in writing the next Mission Impossible as I would writing the next Amistad or the next Schindler's List. So in that sense, I want to write the kind of movies that do. Whether or not I can achieve that, I don't know. I mean, it is a personal desire, yeah, as I'm sure it is with many writers. But right now, I just want to get good projects that I can actually get a job, you know?
Well, you know, when you're there, Brian, when I see you cross the stage, then I'll call you the next day and ask you how it feels.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's talk about Best Picture up front. This is one that came out late in the Oscar year, Chicago. Tell us about the movie itself and whether or not it deserved to win.
Yeah, well, you know, Chicago was a pretty, you know, came out of the blue there and got the most nominations, of course. And it's a strong, dark comedy. It's almost a black comedy, a satire, really, about American culture and the American propensity to make celebrities out of criminals. And so it's a real sort of a dark comedy about that reality. And in that sense, I think there's a lot of truth behind the movie. And I personally hate musicals. And when I went to the movie, I was expecting to really have a tough time getting through the whole thing. But I ended up really enjoying it. And I thought it was very creative, very well done. Whether or not it deserves to be the best movie of the year, I don't know. It certainly was more worthy than Gangs of New York and The Hours, but, you know, my personal favorite would have been About Schmidt or The Lord of the Rings, Two Towers. You know, The Pianist was also nominated, and that was a good movie. And I would suspect it certainly, I would probably pick that over Chicago as well, maybe. I don't know. So, yeah, Chicago was a great movie, you know, well done, very creative. Whether or not it deserved the best film of the year, I don't know. I don't personally think so, but many people do.
Someone mentioned to me in studio before the program today, they wanted me to ask you, they had heard you going to come on, they wanted to ask you about this scenario that you've talked about several times with regard to other films, and that has to do with the bad guys in the story basically triumphing, the good guys kind of going away with their pockets turned inside out and feeling bad about themselves.
Yeah, right. But there's a big difference, though. I know some people have noted that about Chicago, and I've had some disagreements with people over, and I'd be willing to listen to other people's opinions on it. But my own opinion was, when I watched the movie, I got the distinct impression that it was very much a satire. And as a satire, the point of showing the bad guys getting away in the end and triumphing, it was really embodied in that last satirical line that Renee Zellweger said to the crowd as she and her fellow murderess had become a big hot New York show after they got released from prison, and that was, "We couldn't have done it without you." And the whole point is, we the audience are the ones who have made... Sorry, I got a weird phone. We the audience are the ones who have made celebrities out of these criminals. We are guilty of... You know, they're guilty of their crimes, sure, but we are guilty of making them celebrities. And in that sense, having the bad guy triumph in the end should be a moral indictment against us rather than being something that we cheer on and say, yeah, I'm glad they got away with it. You know what I'm saying?
All right, then, this as a musical, you mentioned that you personally don't care for musicals, and I've had a couple other men, seems to be a men thing, who said, if I would have known it was a musical, I wouldn't have gone, something like that. People have said that a culture turns toward the musical, which tends to be more escapist in times of national angst. Do you think that's why this movie did so well this year?
Well, no. I mean, look at all the other ones that were nominated. They were all very serious movies, and some of them with very dark endings, you know? So, no, I don't think so. I think there's always a mixture of everything. There's always a little bit of escapist fantasy. There's always some serious movies. There's always... You know, it's just some in between in comedies. You know, I don't personally think that marks that.
You mentioned a few before that you thought were maybe better contenders for Best Picture. If you had to pick one, which one do you think deserved it most of the films that were nominated this year for Best Picture?
Well, the films that were nominated, well, I'm really biased towards, you know, Tolkien. So, you know, out of those, I would have picked The Two Towers. But I would say maybe between The Two Towers and The Pianist. You know, but I would say the Two Towers, Pianist, and Chicago were the best, and so Chicago winning it didn't anger me like Shakespeare in Love angered me when it won the Oscar, especially in light of Saving Private Ryan was passed over for you know the Shakespeare in Love, and that was angering to me. But this one I certainly understand, and there is, like I say, I think there's a strong moral to the story, and that's good. Strong theme to it as well. But, yeah, I would probably say Two Towers and The Pianist and then Chicago.
Chicago took away a variety of other awards that we won't go into, but it seemed to have swept a lot of the awards here. You mentioned The Pianist. That also, the actor in that, Adrian Brody, got Best Actor. Tell us about this film and the actor.
Yeah, that was quite an upset there. Most people did not expect that, including myself. The Pianist is a very powerful story about a Spielmann, who was a pianist, true story, in Poland, Warsaw, when Hitler invaded Warsaw and turned it into a ghetto. And it basically shows this young man's survival throughout the entire war, actually, and his various experiences throughout, and how he stayed alive and survived. And so in that sense, it's sort of like a Schindler's List. It's got a flavor of that to it. Unfortunately, you know, there's not a lot of redemption in the guy's personal life. I mean, he doesn't, you know, there's not really much that he learns. He doesn't really ultimately get the point or learn any deep, profound lesson from this. It's more just about survival than anything. But nonetheless, it really showed a lot of the war through the eyes of a Pole and a Jewish Pole at that. And it was very powerful and moving, you know. Anyway, he won the best, you know, the best leading role, and, you know, I think the guys who were up for it, most people suspected, including myself, Daniel Day-Lewis was going to win, because even though he was in my opinion, an abysmal movie, it was just really not very good at all, his particular role was just so superb, so superbly done, that he just shined out like, you know, like a gem, you know.
Good actor in a bad movie, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, some people suspected Jack Nicholson, you know, because he, and his role actually in About Schmidt really was, it was a really fabulous movie, and his role, he played it very well with understatement. And of course, that, when you play a role with understatement and yet communicate those powerful emotions, that's, I think, the mark of a good role that's played. And Daniel Day-Lewis's role was a different version. His was a role that played a lot of extremes, but he did that so well. And Adrian Brody, as I remember the movie, he was sort of a stolid observer. He observed a lot, and he was quiet and not very expressive, so he didn't really go through a lot of range of emotions, you know, through the movie, and that's one of the reasons why I thought, you know, it was a good movie, and it was an interesting, but it didn't seem to me to have the emotional depth and breadth that the other characters did, you know.
Best actress in leading role, Nicole Kidman. The movie was The Hours. Tell us about the film.
The Hours, now that was a film that was a very dark, depressing drama about, you know, several people facing suicide and facing serious issues in their lives about not wanting to accept society's roles upon themselves and feeling oppressed by society in their various sexually perverse lifestyles. And Nicole Kidman played Virginia Woolf, and she did an excellent job. I think she deserved it. But I also felt like the other actresses were all just brilliant in their various roles, so they could have each deserved it, you know. Diane Lane, Julianne Moore, Renee Zellweger. I didn't see Salma Hayek. I didn't see that movie, Frida. But and Nicole played Virginia Woolf, which was a woman who was struggling under some physiological, psychological problems, as well as her societal problems of being a woman in society and not feeling like she had the freedom she needed, you know. And so she did a great job in that, and I think she deserved it.
What did you make of the moment? This was mentioned by a previous guest, and perhaps you saw it while you were watching the Oscars. What did you make of the moment where Nicole Kidman spoke in her acceptance speech about always wanting her mother and daughter's acceptance, and actually talking to her mother from the podium there, saying, "Mom, I hope this finally gets me some acceptance with you." Then camera pans slowly to shocked mother. What did you make of that moment?
Yeah, I don't know, man. These, you know, actors and actresses are just really, oftentimes, they're people who are just desperately, desperately desirous to be loved, and I think that's why they do some of the stupid things they do and say some of the stupid things they say. And it's a very peer-oriented industry, you know, so they're very much about the... And that's another thing, the Oscars is really all about getting their approval and acceptance from their peers. They don't... I don't believe they care as much about the public. It's really about each other and getting the love from each other and affirmation from each other, you know. And so that was really just a sort of a maybe a window into the insight, a window of insight into the world of probably what many of these actors and actresses are feeling like, you know. And after all, if you think about it, a life that you play other people, not yourself, saying words that other people write for you, which, by the way, that lends itself to another whole issue about these people, these actors and actresses who are protesting and standing up in protest as if they're authorities, and yet all they do is really repeat lines that other more smart people write.
Like you, yeah.
More smart people. That was really smart, huh? But anyway, window of insight, I guess. But I loved Steve Martin, and I loved a lot of his jabs and jokes. They were great.
Well, I did want to mention that. Let's take a break from talking about the actors and the awards for a second, because Steve Martin is probably, okay, this is my opinion, one of the most lovable Oscar hosts that they could possibly have. And
I agree.
He essentially offends no one and obviously has... he's one of the most consummate comedians of his age. What did you make of his handling of a sensitive night for this gathering, this kind of Hollywood leftist gathering?
Yeah, but you know, he made a few jabs at people, you know, like references to, you know, actors killing their wives, you know, shooting their wives, like Robert Blake and of course OJ. But you know, but also made jabs at Jennifer Lopez and just various other people. Although there was one jab I didn't quite understand, because maybe I missed the news item, where he talked to Halle Berry and said, you know, I've got a restraining order of 22 feet from Halle Berry. I didn't get that one, but you know, he's one man that, in my opinion, he is truly an intelligent man, you know, having a degree in philosophy, and I've read his material. I know he knows he's very intelligent, and so he's a guy that's sort of, to me, is above it all, and he can make jabs at these people and know what he's talking about, you know. Unfortunately, you know, there was no real solidarity that he expressed with our troops overseas. Other than at the end, he just says, "This is for our men and women overseas." He didn't say men and women in the military, but you know, I'm sure that there's you know, most people saw it that way. But by and large, you know, yeah, I think he seemed to be more in a neutral sense in that way.
And I found that interesting too, because I had just read something earlier last week, some statement he had made to the press that expressed very strong opinions.
Oh, really?
About this whole situation, and it made me admire his restraint all the more to see him kind of behave as a gentleman and as a, you know, he is after all the MC, he's not the star of the thing.
Oh, so was he typically leftist then in his opinions about it?
At least from the opinion expressed in the press last week that I heard.
Okay.
Because I thought, guy, I really like Steve Martin. I wish he hadn't said that.
Yeah, so. Okay. Well, you know what? Then I agree with you. Then that actually elevates my respect for him, because he didn't let that out like some of the other buffoons did. So I think that's great.
All right, let's talk about supporting actor and actress. Chris Cooper in the film Adaptation got Best Supporting Actor. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, Adaptation is basically the self-absorbed musings of screenwriters in Hollywood. There's a lot of in-jokes about Hollywood as he struggles with what to write and struggles with commerciality in movies with all the junk you have to have in there versus writing something real meaningful. And so it's a very interesting movie, more for Hollywood insider types, but you know, it's not a very redemptive movie. I wouldn't recommend it. But Chris Cooper does a great job. You know, he's a great actor in there. I do feel that other guys were more worthy of receiving it. I thought Paul Newman in Road to Perdition, and even Ed Harris in The Hours, were really superior in that sense. But you know, he did do a great job, and you know, I think he's a good actor, you know.
Now, he was up against Ed Harris, and
the
predictions were all, well, not all of them, but most of the predictions for Best Supporting Actor was not only will, but he should win Ed Harris. What was the role he played in The Hours again?
He played a homosexual artist dying of AIDS, and he was very bitter and angry and facing suicide. So he basically was an angry character, you know. But he did do a great job on it, you know. although, I mean, in some ways it was maybe a replay of his character in Pollock, you know, the year but previous year, which was also a self-destructive artist type. That's another thing, you know, these movies about the self-destructive artist types, and they're elevated as if they're like they're too good for the world, like they're messiahs who are innocently, you know, destroyed by the world and not, you know, they're ahead of their time and all this kind of stuff. Hollywood likes to make movies like that, which really repulse me, but they like to make celebrities out of criminals, basically, you know.
And the temptation in playing an AIDS victim, I think, in Hollywood would
sure.
be, and I don't think Harris did this, was to make it kind of a saintly figure.
Oh, absolutely.
Sounds like it was a more realistic depiction.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, it was realistic. It was a man of bitterness. But again, understanding the context of the movie is these people who are struggling with all these issues are, and in their perverse lifestyles, they are put in that position because of the society that does not understand them and does not accept them, see? And so, consequently, it is a messianic suffering that they perceive it as.
Best Supporting Actress, again, the movie is Chicago, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Tell us about this.
Great. She did great in the role. I think she was almost better than Renee Zellweger. And people were actually surprised. I think a lot of people did expect Renee to win for the Best Actress, but back to the supporting role. She did a great job. You know, Meryl Streep was also up for the Hours, and of course, in my opinion, she could always win, and it would be fine because she's always great. Queen Latifah for her role in Chicago, and Julianne Moore and Kathy Bates, and they all did. They were all great. They're all great actresses. They did great jobs. Catherine Zeta-Jones had a little bit of that sexy pizzazz to her, so I think people really responded to that.
Kathy Bates, you mentioned Kathy Bates in About Schmidt. She played, if I'm not mistaken, the kind of odd love interest
yeah.
of the main character there, played by Jack.
Yeah.
And I understand, I didn't see the film yet. I'm kind of holding off on this because it's one that I want to see. And anticipation is 98% of the joy for me when it comes to a movie. I understand she actually did a semi-nude hot tub scene in this
yeah.
film with Jack. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true.
And she's
true.
Not exactly your svelte Hollywood...
No.
stereotype.
Yeah, I think they definitely did that just to go against the grain of what most movies do. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think the paper here said she should have won Best Supporting Actress. Do you agree?
No, because I think she's played those characters tons of times, you know, the old hick. In fact, Misery, she earned it in Misery, but it's very similar to Misery. She plays that hick, southern-type person or whatever, you know, with a weird personality, and she does a great job, but it's the same character.
Is she playing herself? I get the sense that she is an actress that is Kathy Bates,
yeah.
who plays a character, and that's her character to play.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are a lot of characters who do that, too, and I think she's definitely one of them.
Brian Gadawa is our guest. We're talking about last night's Oscars. We will be talking a little bit later about Michael Moore, his acceptance speech. It wasn't only an acceptance speech. It was a speech of other kinds, too, and we'll get Brian's reaction to it as well. I want to remind you that our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And the best callers during this hour, in the next 25 minutes, on the issue of the Oscars, will receive Brian Gadawa's book called Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Those phone numbers again, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration.
Wouldn't it be great if we went through life without any problems? Well, that's just not the way things are. Life can get tough, but we can face whatever comes along with peace and confidence, because there is reason for hope. We're your neighbors, the people of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we'd like you to know that with Christ, there's plenty of hope to go around.
A message from your friends at Issues Etc.
evolution in our society. More evil?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the book Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Well, Ken, you've written about the forced sterilization of thousands of Americans, which was carried out because of evolutionary thinking. What happened here?
You know, as evolutionary thinking was popularized more and more through the education system, it pervaded the minds of millions of Americans. Lawmakers believed that by sterilizing what they considered to be unfit humans, this would help in the evolution of a better society. So, you know, a law was passed that actually allowed for the legal forced sterilization of the feeble-minded, the blind, drug addicts, sufferers of TB and syphilis, epileptics, and the deaf and homeless. It was claimed that these people were victims of bad genes. Therefore, the law was needed, they said, to achieve better racial purity. In fact, this law was the model adopted later by Hitler in Nazi Germany and used for the same purpose, would you believe? Now, the law was even tested in court, actually going all the way to the US Supreme Court, and it was declared constitutional by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was a staunch evolutionist. Most people are unaware that this terrible practice of forced sterilization affected 70,000 people and continued in America even into the 1970s. The more people believe evolution, the more we'll see evil fruits in society.
Ken Ham's new witnessing booklet is available free on our website. It answers the question, is there life in outer space? Log on to AnswersRadio.com.
:31 at AM 850 KFUO. Weather for St. Louis, cloudy overnight, rain is likely, low of about 50. For Tuesday, more clouds and more rain in our forecast and a high near 59. Only 59 tomorrow, so a little cooler than today. Right now, partly cloudy and 78 in St. Louis. More with Brian Gadawa after the break on Issues Etc. Another look at St. Louis traffic. McDonald Boulevard at 270. There's a traffic light not working, so be careful there. Westbound 40 after McCausland, stop and go traffic to Hanley and just busy at Mason. Eastbound 40 after Grand Boulevard, slow traffic to the Poplar Street Bridge. And northbound 55 between 44 and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane. That's traffic and weather on AM 850 KFUO. I'm Craig Allen. More Issues Etc. is next.
You've heard the saying, all things being equal, friends buy from friends. Well, it gets even better when your friend sells you something for a much lower price than other people are paying. And Lifeline Long Distance is a Christian company, so we'll donate 10% of every long distance call you make for the advancement of the gospel. Hey, after all, what are friends for? Lifeline, long distance with a higher calling.
To sign up for Lifeline Long Distance service and benefit AM 850 KFUO, call 1-800-607-5128.
Welcome back. 25 minutes left with Brian Gadawa as we talk about the Oscars last night. You might have been watching the war. I am anxious to see what the actual ratings will be for the Oscars. They usually do tend to do well, and I noticed that the Sunday schedule on all the other networks was pretty much pushed out. They put in old movies and stuff like that, anticipating not only war coverage, but the Oscars pretty much drawing in most of the viewers. We'll see how the war and the Oscars competed with one another when the ratings do come out. Brian Gadawa is our guest. He's a screenwriter in Southern California. He's a screenwriter for the new movie called To End All Wars. We'll find out a little bit about that later in our conversation. And he's author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. We'll give away a copy of that book to the best caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Moving on to Best Director. We mentioned before Best Actor in the leading role was Adrian Brody for The Pianist. The director of this film also got Best Director, but apparently was unable to be there to accept the award. Roman Polanski, why is this?
Well, that was another great joke that Steve Martin said. He was looking at the audience and saying who's out in the audience, and then he says, "And oh, look, there's Roman Polanski. Get him!"
What's the story with Roman Polanski?
Well, he had sex with an underage girl years ago, and he escaped America because he didn't want to face up to the penalties for his crime. And so, consequently, he hasn't been able to come back. And that's why he can't show up there. And, you know, that's also one of the reasons why I think that You know, Hollywood chooses the its particular moral issues that it likes to chastise its own about, from smoking to what have you, but they tend to embrace people who engage in sexually perverse lifestyles as being heroes and very sympathetic towards them, so that doesn't seem to mean anything to them, you know. So anyway, that was pretty much of a surprise, and for most people, I think everybody pretty much expected Scorsese to get his sort of, you know, long awaited for Oscar that he deserves for his body of work, shall we say. He did not deserve it for Gangs of New York. I thought it was a terrible movie, but I would have expected it just because of his body of work, and he hasn't received one all these years. So
Well, I mean, just only for, I mean, you talk about a man with a long career,
yeah,
of making some bad ones, but some very, very good films as well. Now, so you don't believe Roman Polanski, now, aside from the moral issue, do you believe that he, if it would have been anyone else with the film that he produced in The Pianist, do you think they would have gotten Best Director?
Yeah. I think it's, in that sense, in a strictly directorial sense, I think all of them, actually Chicago was a very, you know, fast-paced, you know, incredibly edited and directed piece, and so is the Pianist was just well directed, and I think The Hours was as well. But I just didn't think Gangs of New York deserved to be up there, or, you know, for directing.
Now, there's a film that did not get nominated for Best Picture, and then, of course, it didn't get it. It did get the nod for cinematography, a compelling film, and we talked about it before, Road to Perdition.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the film, and do you think it should have been up for Best Picture?
Yeah, you know, thanks for bringing it up, because I forgot about that. As a matter of fact, yeah, I think it should have been up for Best Picture, definitely. I'm glad that it did win what it did in cinematography, you said it was?
Yes.
Okay, visual effects was Lord of the Rings, that's right. Yeah, it was a really well-shot film, very interesting cinematography. I think it should have been up for Best Picture, certainly instead of Gangs of New York.
I'm thinking it's also a gangster movie.
Yeah.
And I found it ironic when we talked about this some time ago when the nominations came out, that Gangs of New York, a gangster movie that almost everyone panned, would not get over what is, you know, in my mind, something like The Untouchables, something of that caliber, especially with someone like Tom Hanks at the helm of a film like Road to Perdition.
Yeah, good point. I agree. I definitely think it should have had many more nods than it had as a movie.
All right, let's see. You have mentioned several times Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Yeah.
And it did get two awards, sound editing and visual effects. Of course, I think it was probably had no competition with regard to visual effects.
Yeah.
But you think this film deserves more. Tell us why.
Well, you know, again, I am biased, I think, and I think I see, you know, I sort of have a commitment to the Lord of the Rings that even goes beyond the quality of the movie, you know. So, you know, I admit that bias, you know, but even in spite of that, I think, you know, the story is just a fabulous, you know, mythological epic, the adaptation, well, actually, Peter Jackson clearly deserves the best Oscar on any one of the movies, really, because what he was able, you know, anybody who knows anything about that, and most of us do know a lot about that, his ability to pull off what he pulled off is one of the most amazing feats of directing in history, I think, let alone the actual directing itself, which I thought is just, you know, a great job of directing that story. And the director's ability to take the story, the written word that's been given to him, and of course he also helped write it a little bit too, and translate that into a movie is that's the key, one of their key abilities, you know, talents of a director, and make it work, and he does that so well. So yeah, I definitely think he deserved to be up for Best Director as well, and he would have deserved that, in my opinion, you know, even if the movie didn't win.
You know, someone who says, you know, you've got demons, Balrogs, you've got wizards, you've got hobbits. This is kids stuff, this Lord of the Rings stuff. How would you respond?
No, definitely not. I mean, It's about the deep, it's mythological underpinnings of our culture. I mean, it's about good and evil. It's about what's going on now over in the Middle East, you know. Do you fight against evil people or do you let them grow? Do you do the right thing or do you do the thing that's most convenient that makes you happiest in the immediate moment, you know, these kinds of issues, as well as courage, bravery, friendship, loyalty. These are all profound themes that are just riddling throughout the film. And not to mention, it's just a great tale, and it doesn't matter whether or not it's a kid's tale or an adult's tale. If you tell a great story, I don't care. I'll love it even if it's a kid's story, which, of course, I don't think it is, because it's actually a very dark, rather violent mythical epic, right? But yeah, it definitely deserves to be considered much more than a child's fable.
Do you think when I understand that the last installment of the trilogy, which would be the Return of the King,
mm-hmm.
is slated to be released next year?
Yeah.
Do you think when the whole meal is on the table, parts 1, 2, and 3?
Uh-huh.
That the director there will get his due on this trilogy of films?
Boy, he better. That's all I can say. There's just no way in my mind that it could come and go and him not get it. There's just no way. You know, just. But again, there's a lot of politics in Hollywood, and it all depends on what other movies are up and who's spending more money on, you know, which studio's spending more money on advertising and pushing and all that.
Well, and as far as I know, this guy is still down in New Zealand editing the last part of the film, so he didn't have a lot of time to do the gripping of hands in Hollywood, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a film that kind of came sleeping in, 8 Mile, starring, mm-hmm. of all people, gangster rapper Eminem. What did you think of this film? It did get Best Song,
yeah.
but it was a something of a critical success.
Yeah, actually, it was actually a pretty good story. I was amazed, and it ended up having a rather good, strong moral to it. This story of a white rapping kid in a black rapping culture, and him trying to get his respect, basically, and basically the whole story is about, enmeshed in that culture is a very blame shifting. Worldview, you know, and it brings this out in the story, and the kid overcomes his own problems and issues and is able to grow and become better by recognizing and admitting his own responsibility in life. I mean, this is profound. I was amazed that this theme got through in Hollywood. You know, normally they should be blaming the white culture, blaming the rich, blaming the Republicans and all that, you know, because that's what they do. They think that they'd like to blame shift their own problems on other people, but the whole essence of the story was take responsibility for your own life and stop blaming others. And it's embodied in the rapping itself. So I thought that was very, very well done, a very well-told story. You know, it's a little edgy and a little bit, you know, a little bit exploitative at times, but, you know.
Okay, let's talk about Michael Moore. I'm going to read his acceptance speech. It's rather short, and I like your reaction to it. This is what Michael Moore said after when he was named as a nominee, he got a standing ovation. And then when he was named as winner, he asked the other nominees up onto the stage with him. That sets the context for these words. He thanks various people. He thanks the Academy, of course. He says, I've invited my fellow documentary nominees onto the stage with us, and we would like to. They're here in solidarity with me because we like nonfiction. We like nonfiction, and we live in fictitious times. We live in the time where we have fictitious election results that elects a fictitious president. We live in a time where we have a man sending us to war for fictitious reasons. Whether it's the fictitious fiction of duct tape or the fiction of orange alerts, we are against this war, Mr. Bush. Shame on you, Mr. Bush. Shame on you. And anytime you got the Pope and the Dixie Chicks against you, your time is up. Thank you very much. Your response?
Well, it's funny. I mean, he doesn't know how the whole country music world responded to the Dixie Chicks, man. They just knocked them off their feet, and the Dixie Chicks had to apologize and pull back what they said because they were losing all their fans because of it. But yeah, you know, I think Michael Moore, you know, obviously we all expected that if he won, because that's what he is. He's a fool buffoon who spouts his viewpoints without, you know, much thinking. He's a very intelligent guy, I'm sure, But I think it was entirely... I have mixed feelings, because on the one hand, I think it was very foolish, but on the other hand, I think it made his viewpoint look foolish, because I know that there are Christians on both sides of the issue. A lot of Christians believe we should be in the war, a lot of Christians believe we shouldn't. But no matter what viewpoint you take on the war, to say what he said made his viewpoint look foolish, because he's just reducing himself to a conspiracy theorist. I mean, if he actually thinks all those, you know, that this is all one big, vast right-wing conspiracy, I mean, that's self-refuting. It makes him look foolish. It was not a good statement or a good argument for his viewpoint. He could have done well. He could have done better. You know, even Adrian Brody had a, you know, classy, subtle way of expressing himself, you know. So I think it just hurt his cause, is what I'm saying, because he said a foolish, extreme, obviously fallacious statements that just were like the statements of a juvenile, you know, of a kid who doesn't know what he's talking about, and he just thinks the whole adult world is against him, you know what I mean? And he could have said something more intelligent, which I'm sure there is things that could be said intelligent for his viewpoint, but he didn't do that. And I actually laughed my head off when Steve Martin said afterwards that he said, after Michael Moore exited the stage and went backstage, he said, you should have seen what a beautiful, precious sight it was backstage just now. He said, when all the union members were escorting Michael Moore into the trunk of his limo, you know. I thought that was really funny. So in one way, it's like, you know, but in another way, I thought, well, you know what? I don't agree with his viewpoint, so I'm glad, because it made his viewpoint look bad. So,
other than Michael Moore's outburst there, how do you think the Oscars, the whole show, went off, and those who participated in as recipients and as presenters and whatnot, how do you think they did, given the context of they were trying to present a more subdued award show? How do you think they did?
Yeah, I do think they did well. I mean, I was expecting, I was not looking forward to hearing all these stupid political statements, but only a few of them slipped through, and then some of them showing the peace sign. You know, I mean, that's fine to me. That's sort of showing your solidarity with that side rather than spouting out what you think are wise words and coming from people who half of them didn't even finish college, and, you know, they just act all their lives. They don't really engage in any political involvement. So, you know, on one level, I don't mind them expressing, like, you know, they always have the little tags or little buttons that they wear, and that's fine, you know, if they want to do that. I thought it was remarkably restrained. I guess I was expecting more, and I'm glad that there wasn't, because I just wanted to see the awards and leave it at that. And I think most Americans did, too. As a matter of fact, I was amazed how much booing there was to Michael Moore when he was giving his little spiel. Considering how many people in Hollywood are on his side, I wasn't sure if they were just people who were thinking it was inappropriate or who actually disagreed with him, but it was great to hear that.
Now, did you notice, I didn't get to see the majority of the awards because I work on Sunday nights, but did you see the any expressions of what would, I guess for lack of a word, support for the war from those who were involved in the Oscars?
I didn't really, you know. Peter O'Toole was like one of the classy guys from the old school, and he... By the fact that he expressed gratitude to this country for, you know, his personal and his private and his professional blessings that he received from this country, you know, I think that was one of the few good things that, you know, in my opinion, was a very, very subtle reference to our country being in a positive sense, you know, and not that he supports the war, but I mean... It's you know, there's so much criticism coming out of Hollywood and hatred for America, and I mean, you know, some of these fools going over to Iraq, you know, I mean, it's almost verging on being traitors, and I think, well, at least here's someone who's reminding us that, you know, even with all our faults in America, we're still a great country and we are a very compassionate and giving country, and he thanked us for that, and I thought that was cool. But yeah, I didn't really sense any, I didn't get any positive morale or support for the war at all from any of them.
What
did
is?
You?
I don't think so. What is it about Hollywood? What is it about the filmmaking industry in America that, as you said before, imparts to actors, directors, filmmakers an added sense of authority on these big issues, or at least they have a self importance on as authorities on these issues.
Yeah. You know, I really think it's the megalomania of stardom, celebrity. These people are told constantly by people in the industry that they're working with. You have to kiss up, and you know, the more famous you are, the more praise you get from people. They're always told and treated like they're gods, and that's not exaggerated either. They really are treated that way by the people in the industry, and I believe they start to believe it. They start to believe that they are the characters they play. They start to think, you know, and I really think they think that they are above the normal people, and we know this by their moral lives. And, you know, and we know this by their hypocrisy. Many of them are for gun control, and but then they get their own private little dispensations to carry weapons on themselves and their bodyguards. So I mean, they really believe that they are above the masses, and they deserve, their morality is higher, and they believe in morality for the rest of people, but not themselves. So I really do think it's megalomania. They think they are above the rest of the people. So it's their honor and duty as the overmen, as the ubermensch, to tell the rest of us proletariat, you know, what we should really do, you know. But
now, with on the one hand, I would say, look, we have complete free speech here in this country, as long as they're not yelling fire in the Kodak Theater. I don't have a problem with them saying what they say if they want to say it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know what it is where there's this kind of needling sense of abusing one's position when we're paying you to basically be very highly paid clowns, entertain us, abusing that position or taking advantage of that position.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's what I perceive it as. Yeah, you're right. Everyone has free speech, but they're really just abusing it, taking it to extreme because they really think they are something more than they are. And that's just too bad. And I think a lot of Americans are really standing up and just saying, you know, enough already. Again, even if you agree with them, it's like, enough already, you know?
Actors. There's a film that's coming out. And we talked about it earlier last week, I believe it was, a week before last, here on Issues, Etc. Coming out, going to be directed and largely produced and funded by Mel Gibson. The movie is called The Passion, or at least that's what it's tentatively called. And we spoke with Raymond Arroyo of EWTN about the film. He actually did the first interview with Gibson and got the first pictures out from the film itself. What do you anticipate about this film from Mel Gibson?
Well, what I really anticipate is the first Jesus movie that really shows, more accurately what Jesus really experienced in terms of the suffering, because we really haven't seen it in these other movies. You know, it would be too gruesome to show. But I think it's a crucial part of the truth, and I'm excited about that. You know, a Jesus movie that's rated R, basically, because it should be, and that's the way the Bible is. But so I'm excited about that, but I'm sort of disappointed about it not having subtitles. It's going to be original Aramaic and Greek languages, and no subtitles, because he wants to tell the story in such a way that doesn't need subtitles. I think that's interesting, and I think it's going to be, if he pulls that off, it's possible. I mean, it's possible to tell story visually. We used to watch silent movies, right? But, you know, I mean, I would rather have the subtitles, or at least have that option, maybe on DVD. But, you know, so that's interesting, but also it's going to hurt him, too, because regardless of the persecution that he's experienced because of the spiritual nature of the movie, you know, it makes wise sense for these studios to say, well, you know, we can't make money if you're going to have subtitles that people can understand it, you know. So it's going to make a lot less money, and I would think he'd want more people to see it. But, you know, that's his prerogative, I guess.
Well, Raymond Arroyo had seen a rough cut of about a half hour of this 90-minute film.
Yeah.
And he said Gibson actually took him in I think it was Rome, to a screening studio, showed him what the film was so far.
Uh-huh.
And this is what Arroyo said. He said, visually, the film is so captivating, it is so faithful to the passion narratives of the Gospels, that he said pretty soon you almost forget that you're listening to the dialogue in a language you don't understand. And he said against his expectations. It actually conveys the story in a compelling way without being able to understand all the dialogue. Now,
well,
this is
cool.
A guy who probably knows the Passion history fairly well, so he doesn't need the dialogue, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, well, I hope it does, man.
Why has Gibson received not only the lack of support for this film, you mentioned that, but why is there so little support for this film in Hollywood? Aside from the fact that it will make money.
Yeah, you know, I really think it's just, you know, we live in a world that accepts the idea of God in general, because God in general is nonspecific. There's no accountability. There's no sin or hell behind that. It's just this concept of an ultimate good, and God in general is okay. But as soon as you get specific about Jesus, I really think it's just what the Bible talks about, the offense of the cross. It's just, no matter how good you are, no matter who you are, the world does not really like Jesus, because he brings conviction upon them for their sin, and that's what it's supposed to be, you know? So I think ultimately it really comes down to that.
Brian Gadawa, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Gadawa is a screenwriter in Southern California. He is a screenwriter of the new movie To End All Wars. I failed to mention the film, but next time we have him on, we'll have him describe that film a little bit more to us. And he's author of this book called Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Folks, you can visit Brian Gadawa's website. It's Godawa.com, G-O-D-A-W-A.com, G-O-D-A-W-A.com on the internet for yourself. Aside from the fact that virtually every time the Oscars rolls around, there's going to be some issue upon which someone is going to rant and rave and spout off, we come back to the question we began with. Is this stuff important? Especially when we've got bigger issues ablaze in the Middle East. Apart from the fact that maybe every once in a while we just need to sit back and watch the glitterati spin and dance before us on a magical stage and receive their accolades from one another, that's fine. The product of Hollywood is highly influential in our culture. It is not only the influence of our culture, it's the affluent of our culture, the effluent of our culture. And the stream runs both ways, reflecting and reproducing in our culture what film shows. Christians need to be keenly aware of what's appearing on the silver screen. And, insofar as it's helpful, be keenly aware of what Hollywood thinks is useful and Hollywood thinks is worth noticing and worth awarding. We get a better handle on what it's producing, why it's producing it, and the worldviews behind it by things like the Oscars. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.